This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. People who create Hollywood blockbusters have to start somewhere, and many of these directors, producers, and editors begin in the independent film world. Communities across the country host film festivals, and Bonita Springs is among them with its International Film Festival, which begins next Friday. We'll have a preview coming up in the second part of our show today. But first, a new exhibit of more than 60 paintings and found object installations, by renowned Sanibel Ireland artist, educator, and social activist, and WGCU maker, Mira Roberts, is coming to the Sydney and Byrne Davis Arts Center in downtown Fort Myers. This eclectic exhibit, titled Dream Piece, runs from February 2nd through the 24th and features works tackling issues of social injustice and the current political atmosphere, as well as that of the World War II era, and includes portraits and sculptures of Holocaust survivors and testimonial interviews from those who lived through the Holocaust, presented in multimedia works Roberts describes as talking suitcases. On the other end of the spectrum, the exhibit will include more ethereal paintings depicting the Buddha and works from Roberts' recent Florida retro painting series, which evoke nostalgia for a seemingly simpler time, as well as works that draw attention to some of Florida's endangered wildlife. The exhibition opening, which coincides with the next Art Walk event in downtown Fort Myers, will also include an ethnographic-centered performance by members of the theatrical collective She Will Fade. Roberts has used several works in the exhibit in educational presentations presented to students at local public schools, at Hodges University, here at Florida Gulf Coast University, the Cape Coral Historical Society and Museum, Shell Point Retirement Village in Fort Myers, and the Holocaust Museum and Education Center of Southwest Florida, among other venues. Mira Roberts is with us today in studio for a conversation taking a deeper look into her work. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you.
And listeners can join our conversation and connect with Mira Roberts. Our regular toll-free number is having technical issues, but you can connect with the show now by calling 239-590-2580. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And first of all, I was hoping you could give us some insight into how you've approached the selection process for the works that are going to be in this exhibit, because as I mentioned, it seems rather eclectic, but there are some interesting connections. And specifically, I'm interested in this concept of juxtaposing images conveying like a 1940s style laid back Florida, and then juxtaposing that with works conveying what was going on in Europe over that same time period.
Sure. It always intrigued me to think about the 1940s in the United States and how Florida, for example, we had the heyday in the 40s of pinups and bathing beauties and lighthearted images on the beach, and what was happening in Europe at the time. My background is my family. Many of the members were killed during the Holocaust at that time in the 1940s, and many of my friends' families. So naturally, I thought about that. But I also continued to do my lighthearted work and created a very large body of pinups from the 1940s and bathing beauties and beach scenes. And then I felt compelled to segue into what I call social commentary art. That is art that can deeply educate people.
Right, and of course, we'll delve into this later on in the show too, but this includes works that tackle a broad range of issues, like the last presidential election, gun control, and other social justice issues as well. Specifically, your painting titled Sheep, does that come into play here in terms of this concept of, you know, talking about the Holocaust and juxtaposing these sort of two different worlds basically at the same that were happening at the same time in just different parts of the world?
Well, Sheep is one of my more important pieces and one of my earlier pieces that depicts how human beings tend to base their judgments on group pressure or wanting to belong and not wanting to really make decisions other than the group makes. And the visual image of the sheep is a beautiful little home in Germany. And out the window, you'll see lots of sheep. And you'll see also a child doing the Heil Hitler sign.
Yeah.
And it really shows how people were brainwashed in that period of time, making poor decisions, maybe not even based on their own feelings, but based on the crowd and the pressure that they were feeling at the time.
Right. And can you tell us more about just like your general interest in this time period in the Holocaust? I mean, you had mentioned, you know, your father narrowly escaping Norway, many members of your family not escaping, you know, and then growing up in this, you know, largely Jewish community in the north side of Chicago. And I think I remember reading that your best friend at the time's mother had survived the Auschwitz death camp.
Well, I'll tell you Mary's story.
Okay.
That was my best friend's mother. And I would go to her house after school in high school, and I would see the numbers on her hand and the numbers on her father's arm. And she wouldn't really talk about it, but segue maybe 30 years later, and she knew I was painting Holocaust subject matter, and she said, I would like to give you the diary of my mother who escaped Auschwitz. Would you like it? And I said, absolutely. So she had it. It was in Israel at a museum called Yad Vashem. And she had it translated for me from German into English. And it was quite a thick diary. And one of the things that really touched me in that diary was not just her experience, but her wanting people to know about it. So one of my earlier portraits was of Mary, and Mary's experience in Auschwitz was nothing but incredible because she survived.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. And as you said, it was, you know, you saw the tattoos, the numbers, but when you were growing up, was that something that people tended not to talk about very much?
Very much so. Oh. My parents did not want to scare us kids, although my father had – I remember he had so many locks on our door, and he would tell me, be careful of Polish people and Germans because they don't like you. And if I had a friend with a Polish name, he'd say, you better not be friends with that person, which – only made me want to do the opposite. But I did not understand that deep anxiety, fear, and really a little bit of depression that I sensed in his life because of his family being killed in Poland.
I get the impression he was kind of a, you know, stern, maybe even a little detached. Do you think that the work that you're doing, you know, as it relates to the Holocaust, whether that's, you know, education with students or just the education that comes from viewing and experiencing your work has maybe in a way helped you sort of understand where he was coming from more?
Well, it's been very cathartic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I totally now understand, and I didn't as a teenager at all, as a rebellious teenager, I was like, what? I can't be friends with this person. I do understand where he's coming from all the work that I did. And if he were alive today, I would probably apologize and say, Dad, I'm really sorry. I didn't understand. But on the other hand, they were so traumatized, they wouldn't talk about it. So I've learned a lot about it since.
And Mary, the best friend's mother, was she somehow involved in sort of your introduction into becoming an artist?
Well, Mary really was the first Holocaust survivor I painted. So in that genre, yes.
Okay.
Because of her story, which is just so compelling.
Yeah. Tell me about your beginnings as an artist. I know you studied art therapy at the University of Arizona.
Yes.
Did you always know that this is what you wanted to be doing?
I have always known this is what I wanted to be doing since I was a tiny little girl, and my mom would take me by the hand and walk me down the street to an artist's house, and I might have been 5 or 6 years old, and I remember just the smell of the paint and the brushes, and she had a kiln and clay, and I remember saying to my mother that day, Mom, I want to be an artist when I grow up. So yes, at a very young age, I remember this.
All right. And I know you also taught for a time.
Many years, yes.
You know, specifically with kids who had some pretty severe emotional issues or behavioral issues. What was that about? Is that something that you had intentionally wanted to do, work with that specific segment of
Yes, I had a real interest in art as therapy. And at that time, art therapy had just sort of begun. It wasn't that popular as it is today. And I found it to be a great tool to use with children who were not just – I used that tool with children who were handicapped. For instance, I had a boy who had muscular dystrophy, and I taught him how to paint with his mouth using a paintbrush. And it was so rewarding. And then I worked with children who witnessed the murder of their parents and were traumatized. Wow. And I found that they couldn't speak about it. And some of them were autistic and couldn't speak at all. But what they could paint was incredible. And may I tell one story?
Absolutely.
Okay. About a girl named Yvette, who is 12 years old, and she was very attached to me. And I remember getting a call from the school psychologist that said Yvette's father just shot himself in the head in front of Yvette after he tried to rape her.
Oh, my gosh.
And I know. I said, oh, my God, could you come over to her house because we know how much she loves you. So I brought a box of crayons and a sketchbook. And Yvette, of course, was sitting there traumatized. And she drew a picture, a stick figure of herself with tears coming out. She used the red marker for blood, and that was the only way she could show me. And the other stick figure was her father trying to knock her, strangle her. And I still have that picture. But that one drawing that she did calmed her down, helped her focus and express what had that traumatic event that happened to her. So I found art therapy to be an incredible tool for helping people in traumatic situations like Yvette.
Wow. I mean, maybe not quite so dramatic, but do you find art therapeutic for yourself? If you just find yourself enraged about some issue,
yes.
Like, well, I'm going to paint about it.
Well, I've had a little bit of rage lately with a lot of things that are going on in just our society in general. So my answer is yes. It helps me a lot to go to my canvas and let loose at the thoughts that I have and things that I want to express. I think it's quite a wonderful gift to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the pieces again that are going to be in there.
Okay.
The Talking Suitcases is one that I mentioned in
yes.
the introduction. Tell us about that.
That's a new project. Well, I have been collecting suitcases for about 5 years now. I didn't know what I was going to do with them, but I'm interested in found object sculptures or doing installations using found objects. And so most of them were old leather suitcases from that period of time, World War II. And I realized it would be great to be able to have them talking. That is to say, put video recordings on the computer monitor right inside the suitcase and have portraits of the person on the outside of the suitcase so you could really get the feel for the person and their experience during World War II. And so I've done, I think, six of them. The video recordings, the editing of them take a long time to do. So I'm just beginning this project, but I will have several of them in the show. And one of them is Robert Hilliard. I consider him one of the greatest war heroes that I personally have had the privilege to meet, who was stationed in Dachau. And he has a long story, but basically he discovered in 1945 that people were still being imprisoned in the concentration camp there. And as a young soldier, he was appalled by this, and he started a letter-writing campaign. And finally, after an exhaustive year of writing these letters to both Truman and Eisenhower, he was able to get front-page headlines in the New York Times that the Jews were still being imprisoned, and he saved all these people. He literally walked them to St. Etienne's Church, and he said many of them died of starvation along the way. They were already very ill, and he kept these people alive, as many of them as he could. And when I visit his home, I see this poster of the descendants of these people he saved with notes to Bob, thank you. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for you.
Wow.
And he lives in my community on Sanibel. And he's sort of my mentor, and he gives me the strength to do what I do.
Wow, that's a wonderful story. And Bob's been a great friend and advisor for WGCU for years. So we're you know, we love having him around here as well. But I'm just thinking about this idea of, you know, collecting these stories. You know, about a decade ago here at WGCU, I had the honor of being part of a project where we talked to Holocaust survivors living throughout Southwest Florida. And, you know, it just seems so important, you know, projects like that and these talking suitcases, because as time goes by, we're losing more and more of these firsthand accounts.
Yes.
You know, people in future generations aren't going to be as lucky as you and I were to be able to speak with them directly.
Well, I find them extremely valuable. And because art stands the test of time, I believe that these stories will, through these paintings and suitcases, be around when I'm not around, and they will speak for themselves and teach future generations many lessons about these survivors and these heroes that I have painted. And I myself have learned so many new things through these people that I have painted. And these stories are tools for me to take to schools, to educate others and have on display at the Burn Davis, et cetera.
All right. We're talking with renowned artist, educator, and social activist Mira Roberts ahead of the opening of a new exhibition of her works titled Dream Piece. And again, that's at the Sydney and Burn Davis Art Center in downtown Fort Myers. Listeners can join our conversation. Phone lines are open. Call 239-590-2580. Or again, on Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. Find us on Twitter. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And on the topic of these stories, I was hoping you could tell one regarding your portrait called Aurora. And want to see the painting, we do have a digital copy you can see at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. So tell us about that.
That's a very special story, and one that I would never have learned about if it weren't for a commission that I got for a painting. And I was commissioned by a couple that lost quite a few relatives in the Armenian Genocide of 1912. Mm. And I've studied so much about the Holocaust, and I thought, why shouldn't I learn about the Armenian Genocide? So through this commission, and I was told I could just about do anything I want, I researched and I read as many books as I could, and that's how I begin all my work. I spent a couple weeks reading, going online, not knowing really how to express in a painting the Armenian Genocide. The Armenian Genocide is interesting because it is denied by the Turkish people, and it's similar to the Holocaust because there are still people out there who deny the Holocaust ever happened. And another interesting fact that I learned is Hitler learned about genocide by studying the Armenian Genocide. So there's a real connection to the Holocaust. So I discovered a woman named Aurora Mardignanian. Difficult for me to say. Aurora Mardignanian was probably, I think, around 21 years old, and she was sent out during the war onto the desert with around 17 other girls. She was number 17. And all of these girls were brutally murdered, raped and murdered, and impaled on sticks and left to die in the desert. Aurora escaped miraculously. Somehow she was able to make her way to New York City, where she met a screenwriter. She was encouraged to write her story, and she happened to be a great writer. After she wrote the story, it was made into a movie called Ravished Armenia, and you could still see the movie if you go online.
Wow.
And you could actually hear Aurora speak. I YouTubed her, and here she is in her 90s. I think this was like 1994, speaking about her experience. But when she escaped the desert, just like the Holocaust victims, she wanted to tell her story. And the fact that she told her story was made into a Hollywood film. That film was so popular, it grossed millions. Wow. And the beautiful part of it is she sent all that money back to the orphans, and there were a lot of them because 1.3 million or more people were extinguished during that war. She sent money back to the orphans. rather than keep it herself. Wow. So I have a lot of respect for her, and she's called the Armenian Joan of Arc. So if you forget that complicated name, just look up Armenian Joan of Arc, and she is the beautiful portrait that I did that you could see at the Byrne Davis.
Awesome. Oh, that's amazing. There's another story I was hoping you would tell about one of your portraits that's going to be featured in this exhibit. And you can also see this one on our website at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live as well. And this was an accomplished dancer who lost her life in the Holocaust.
Francesca Mann, yes. Mm-hmm. Francesca Mann was another person that I had no idea who she was. And I think there's a lot of people out there that wouldn't know her name. But I think she's very much worth knowing because she was the top prima ballerina in Europe and Poland and all over Europe. She was a young, beautiful, extremely talented dancer. And I received a picture of her as a ballerina, and it was just so beautiful. And I thought, I've got to paint her and learn about her. And come to find out that she was taken from a ghetto in Warsaw, where she probably would have been killed. And she was told she was being taken with 30 other women to Switzerland, where she felt that she would have been safe. But she ended up in Auschwitz. And she decided that she wasn't going to just stand still and die. So when she was asked to take off all her clothes, it was reported by a witness that she did take off her clothes very slowly and maybe seductively so that she would get the attention of a Nazi guard. And when she got the attention of the guard, sure enough, he came close to her, close enough where she could grab his pistol. And she was brave enough to grab the pistol and shoot and kill this man. And unfortunately, another guard had heard the commotion. She had all the other women fighting back with her. To no avail, however, because all of them were shot and killed. But I will say it's worth noting that they weren't killed in the showers in the gas chamber. They were killed by gunfire. And I find her to be inspiring and brave in fighting for her life and the lives of others. And I think that's really worth talking about and learning about.
Yeah. I mean, do you really see art as really a way to connect with the past or I guess more broadly to be an educational tool? You bring these presentations to community groups and to schools.
Social commentary art has been with us a very long time. And when I was a little girl, one of the paintings at the Art Institute in Chicago, where I'm from, was of a slave in shackles. And I remember asking my mother, why does he have that around his wrists? And I wanted to know more about slavery. Or Picasso's Guernica, for example. Yeah. When I went to Spain and stood before it, I felt the great power of this painting, which is the most important anti-war painting in all of history. So yes, art is always able to tell a story that lasts into as long as the art lasts, which can be for centuries.
And I know some of your portraits have even, you know, more contemporary figures have garnered personal responses from the actual people depicted, like Hillary Clinton and Jane Goodall. I was hoping you could tell me maybe about some of those interactions.
Hillary Clinton, yes, wrote me a personal letter when I gave a copy of my book to Hannah Rosenthal, Hannah Rosenthal was working on a special envoy to study anti-Semitism all over the world. And I went to one of her talks, and I gave her my Anne Frank book. And she said, I know someone who would love this book. And I said, who? She said, do you have another copy for Hillary? Would you write a note on it? Within, I would say, less than 3 weeks, I received an official White House letter from Hillary that said, keep on doing what you're doing because it will help future generations. I'm very proud of you and I thank you for what you did. And, of course, I treasure that. So when Hillary was running for president, I was inspired to do a portrait of her as a young girl to show her beauty and innocence that was not depicted at that time. She was kind of mocked as being the evil witch in a lot of cartoons that I saw. So I wanted to show her as more of a wide-eyed, innocent, positive young woman, which I still see her as.
And she's I think she's wearing an Eisenhower campaign button.
That's because her father, she was brought up in a Republican household, and I wanted to show that part of her, that she was a Republican that turned Democrat, and that's okay.
Yeah. Another, you know, maybe more contemporary issue in a work that's going to be in this exhibition really gets into the Sandy Hook mass shooting.
Yes.
And I just before you say anything, I really found the use of the color yellow in that painting. And by the way, this is another one you can see at our website. Just that bright, happy schoolhouse yellow in the background.
Well, a lot of my paintings you're attracted to them because of the bright colors, and you're a little confused when you learn the message. And that's one of them. Can I tell you what inspired me to do that painting?
Please.
I was driving down the road in Fort Myers, and I'm sure everyone sees the big gun signs, the gun show signs. And they're painted very brightly, like to attract attention, obviously. But I think that day there was one of the many gun massacres, which really upset me because gun control is a big issue of mine. So I took a photograph of it. I went home, and I basically used a similar but very different composition to express what I feel about lack of gun control. So I did quite the opposite of what the meaning of the poster is.
Yeah, yeah. And I understand there's going to be works from, you know, series you've done in the past regarding or highlighting, you know, the plight of endangered indigenous life here in Southwest Florida, some of our endangered species.
That's one thing I've always continued to do. Living on Sanibel, I've done quite a few pieces regarding that, including kind of a controversial piece called Big Sugar of that will be in the show of a manatee. And I love manatees, but I don't love the fact that many of them died not too long ago from a red tide explosion. And I think close to 1,000 of them had died. And I saw a picture of them lined up on the shores. And that upset me. So I painted a great big manatee that day. But this manatee was wearing an oxygen mask and a tank on his back, and at the bottom of the sea was a spilled can of a jar of sugar, and I call it my big sugar manatee. And I do endangered turtles as well, and I did one just recently called Red Tide Turtle.
Wow, yeah. I think when it comes to our natural environment issues, especially living on Sanibel, that's not quite as controversial. But you are pretty outspoken with your political leanings and with your social justice issues and your work. And I'm wondering if you've experienced much pushback, given that, you know, it's no secret we live in a very socially and politically conservative area.
I have had pushback. I have had a letter on Facebook or a comment on Facebook saying, I don't plan on buying any more of your works. And I understand that on both sides, people are passionate about what they believe. And I think that if someone feels that way, I respect their feelings. I may not agree with their basic philosophy. And it's okay to feel that way because I feel just as strongly.
Right.
So I understand those strong feelings. So yes, I've had pushback, and but I think I've had more positive results. People thanking me and saying, "Wow, we really need someone now to be strong and have convictions and speak out, so we can have a better world." Because it's the people who speak out who make it that way.
Well, and, you know, and on the topic of these social justice issues, I've noticed that you have a child that came out as transgendered.
Oh, yes.
And I was wondering if that has found its way into your work, or if you think, you know, the idea of exploring gender identity or just the LGBT movement in general is something that we can see in your work. Because it seems like it would follow the theme. You know, this is like the civil rights movement of the 21st century.
Yes, it is. I included that in a painting called Sitting Ducks. And it's hard to describe this painting, but it's a Fox News train running over a lot of different ducks. And one of them, of course, is the LGBTQ community. And, of course, that's not just a result of my daughter, who is transgender, but it's the result of anyone who is different, that is brave enough to come out as who they are. So my artwork does explore that and probably will continue to.
Well, let's, you know, before we say goodbye, I wanted to talk a little bit more about what folks can expect at the exhibition opening, which is from 6 to 10 on February 2nd at the Sydney and Byrne Davis Arts Center. There's going to be a music component, a theater component as well. Tell me about how this all came together.
I think I always thought it would be interesting to go to an event where there was a collaboration of the visual arts along with theater and music. So I asked a good friend of mine who is a fantastic pianist if she would play piano. And so she has spent, the last few years putting together a theme for this show. Her name is Roxanne Olefsky, and I'm real thankful for the work that she's going to be doing. I think it's going to go well with my work. And her son is part of a group called Amos Lee, who I also was a great fan of before I even met Roxanne. And I hope some of his music could play during the event, too. And then I met through FGCU a theater group called She Will Fade. And they really work well with what I'm doing. They do work that's ethnographic.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I said it.
Yes.
And that is, they take recordings of women who've been sexually abused or abused on many different levels, and they get permission to act out their stories. And I think they've taken close to 1,000 testimonies they have recorded. And I believe they're doing like a short 15 to 20 minute improv little play that goes with one of my paintings called Grab Her, yeah. One of my controversial paintings. And so I'm glad to have them, as well as Debbie Sheem, who is a dancer that runs a yoga and dance studio, Sanibel Dance and Pilates and Yoga, on the corner of my street. And she's a very talented dancer, and she agreed to dance in honor of my painting of the ballerina who was murdered in Auschwitz named Francesca Mann. So I have three different things going on, and I think it will make the event very intriguing, exciting, and enjoyable, I hope.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the show. But thanks so much to my guest, acclaimed artist, social activist, and educator, Mira Roberts. Again, her show is opening February 2nd. It runs through the 24th. It's titled Dream Piece, and that will be at the Sydney and Byrne Davis Arts Center in downtown Fort Myers. The exhibition opening will also be featuring music from pianist Roxanne Olefsky and a performance by the theatrical collective She Will Fade. We're taking a short break, but when we return, a preview trailer of sorts for the Bonita Springs International Film Festival. We're talking with the organizers of next week's event to hear what small productions you can expect to see on the big screen. Stay with us.